And welcome to Cyber Therapy Season 2. Woo! My name is Ashley Lee. I am Senior Marketing Manager here at Jupiter One, host and producer of this podcast. And here I am with my friend and co-host, Tony Ramirez. Want to say hi?
Hey, how's it going? How's everyone doing?
Woo! Tony is a Senior Customer Success Engineer here at Jupiter One. And I'm so glad that we finally get to host a show together. This was one of our many dreams many years ago. Yes. And so super excited. If this is your first time here tuning in for Cyber Therapy, this is the show where we like to meet people in cybersecurity, get to know them, and then just learn from people. And today's particular episode, we are naming it Translating Between Technical and Non-Technical, because I feel like that is a very important skill to have, especially in cybersecurity world where everything is very technical, and we have the advent of security culture and security awareness and everything else like that. So all that to say, welcome to season two. We're so glad that you're here. But first, let me ask, Tony, you are many things outside of this job. You have a lot of passions and hobbies. So, name of them, a few of them. You're a musician, right?
Yes, musician. I enjoy cooking. I have recently taken up dog walking. I have, many broad interests with, just moderate, I switch around a lot, That is kind of my thing, kind of a thinker.
And you also try to get people invested and engaged in your hobbies as well.
Yes, that is 100% true. I won't deny it. I think there's many a time where I'm like, hey, you should check this out. And you look at me like, no.
Like when during the pandemic, you got me into sourdough.
I got you into sourdough. Yes. I had already had a starter before the pandemic, and I started dipping my toe into baking and playing around with it, getting into it. And then, of course, you were like, I want to try this too. I want to get into this. And you had just moved to, of all places,
Colorado,
where it's very difficult to make your own starter, which ironically enough, it's also difficult here in Chicago to do the same thing. You have to either get one, but you have a more difficult challenge.
The baking part of it. The altitude, baking at altitude is no simple feat. So, but I will say, when you were getting me into baking sourdough bread, it was very interesting to me how you would talk about it, because you would get into the science of it. And you'd be the reason why you need this amount of salt, but not too much salt, is because you need it to ferment, but you don't want it to ferment too quickly. And you went super scientific on me.
Yes.
And so, thus,
and I definitely saw your eyes roll. You definitely had, there were a few moments where
we were on the phone. Rolled. We weren't even on screen.
I could definitely hear the, okay, enough. But I mean, that's the foundation of our relationship. Our friendship is around me getting too in the weeds and you trying to just get to the point. And that is,
entire relationship. Yes. And I will say, the video that you sent me, so our producer in the background, Tyler Peterson, he's going to share a link in the chat. It's a 40-minute video, so you don't have to watch the whole thing, but it's Bob versus Alice and how they encounter a math problem. And to sum it up, Alice is the person who likes to think about the problem and different ways to look at the problem, whereas Bob wants to just get to finality and an answer. And if that doesn't describe our relationship, I don't know what does. I mean, you're very much like Alice in thinking about the problem and how to, the journey, so to speak, right?
Yep.
And I am very much, what is the point of all this? Why does it matter?
Yes, that has always been kind of our quarrel, if you will. And here's the thing. It works because we know each other. We've established a trusted relationship over several years. But I've said this, I love the idea of what is the thing that needs to be done to solve the problem, all these little pieces, working them together and how they work. And, you know, you come up with an answer. I'm like, the answer is like, whatever, who cares? But like, that's like,
the answer is the reason why we're doing this in the first place.
Of course, but you have to do the stuff to get to the answer.
This is true. And this is why I will say number one takeaway of being able to refine the translation between technical and non-technical speak is to find your opposite that you can bounce ideas off and have the conversation. Because there's really no other way to improve it other than to practice. And you get immediate feedback when you have people that you can practice with. Mm-hmm. So, takeaway number one. I will say that the conversations that we had when we were working at NowSecure were very helpful, because I'd ask you one question and I'm expecting one simple answer. Mm-hmm. And it turns into an hour long, well, here's the journey and you have to think about this. Mm-hmm. And then you got to think about this. You got to think about this. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, it takes a lot of patience, but you learn so much along the way. I will tell you that, like, being able to be friends and working with somebody who knows the technical pieces in and out and can explain it in multiple mm-hmm. different ways, because I will ask mm-hmm. very many questions to get to an answer, it's a journey. And so the context matters. And I would say here, even at Jupiter One, that we like to say the context matters. You want to know and understand the context of the data that you're looking at, the context of like the business and what they're trying to do. So tell me a little bit more, Tony.
I'm going to bring it back, because I know I frustrated you with my long-winded explanations. But at the same time, as somebody who explains these things, I've also learned when working with you and working with other people who've been in that similar position as you, that you're always going to ask this question, like, but what if it's not? But what if it's this? But what if it's that? And to me, it's just like, well, no, this is the thing, and this is how it works, and this is it. And like, no, that doesn't matter. That's not a part of this thing. Or, oh, and that's always where our conversations went. And mm-hmm. and they were good, because it made me also contemplate on like, well, what if it wasn't? What if this wasn't? Like, what would cause it to not be that thing? And then I realized, I started like, well, I know she's going to ask this, so I'm going to say, and this thing would happen only, so this only applies in this scenario. And I think even times I would end up giving you like, oh, here's a, like a Punnett square diagram that explains this thing. Oh, here's a Venn diagram that explains this
thing. Our favorite Venn diagrams, yes.
Yes, and all these other little things where I'm like, I just need to visually represent this in some way. I need to show you this in a way that makes sense. Otherwise, you're going to ask me, well, why not this? Or why not that? And I came to this conclusion that, when you're explaining something to someone, it's almost like if you have that common ground, if you have that common life experience or something, you know, like everyone uses like car analogies, like everyone uses like specific analogies that are just so cliche, but they work because everyone's had that experience with that type of thing, where nobody's going to talk about, you know, like relate sourdough to quantum physics. But that's what Ashley has tried
to do today. That's exactly what we've been talking about, though.
So yeah, that's exactly what we're doing today. But it's an analogy that works for me, because like, I like that aspect of let's explain the problem and let's come up with something that it relates to. Let's try to relate the problem to other things. And what I told you was, I was going to say like all of these problems, like solving these problems, are just like relatable things, and how you can relate them to other problems is what I'm always curious about. And I'm getting really long-winded about it right now.
No, but I think that is a perfect segue to like takeaway number two, right? Is the patience to understand the person that you're talking to and what's going to help them understand. Like, I think I've asked you enough questions at this point, and you know me well enough to know like what to relate it to, whether it's like mm-hmm. certain anime arcs or like, you know, random stuff. But that is what I think helps bridge the gap from technical to non-technical, right, is being able to relate it back to your audience. You have gotten to know your audience well enough to be able to translate in your head and bring those metaphors to life, which I greatly appreciate because it does help me understand on a more fundamental level and be more confident with my knowledge going forward. So thank you for bridging that gap. Now, just a reminder to all our listeners out there, all, what does Carter say on 100X Engineering? 2.4 million views. Yes. The important thing here is the patience to wade through all of that. So I want to take a step back to something you said earlier about building common ground and trust. How did we do that?
Yeah.
If you were to look back, I know how I would say it, but I want to hear it from your perspective.
So if you were an outside observer, we do not have any of the what people would say are did you work together? Did you live in the same city, county, state? No, we just happened to have, we happened to work at the same company. We didn't work in the same department. In fact, when Ashley started before me, but we worked in roles where there wasn't really a lot of reason for us to interact either.
Nope. And there wasn't a lot of overlap.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that make it weird. We've never worked in an office together. We've never worked in the same department. So when you outline all these things, it's kind of weird. But if I look back into the first time we met, it was during a scavenger hunt. And somewhere on
the
my
one
phone,
time we happened to be in the same town at the same time because we were doing a company all hands.
Mm-hmm. And it was my first week.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah. I think it was maybe my third week on the job. So yes. I was, that was actually, I think, my first time to, second time to Chicago. And so it was really nice because I think it was June. So it wasn't too gross yet and muggy.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we played a photo scavenger hunt organized by Keith Mokris, who's over at Orca. And he's, that was a lot of fun. Him and John Porter, I think, also involved in that.
At Splunk. Yeah, and somewhere on my phone is a 7 or 8 year old picture of you standing next to a caterpie, I want to say.
Oh, yeah!
From somewhere on my phone. This was
the dawn of Pokemon Go.
The dawn of Pokemon Go. And that was the scavenger hunt item we had to collect somewhere near a Chicago whatever. And yes, what a time. What a time.
It was a great time. But I will say, after that particular time, which was fun, don't get me wrong, I would venture to say we didn't really talk to each other for the next year plus, because you were working through supporting our customers. Mm-hmm. And I was over in demand gen marketing, trying to get the word out there about Now Secure. So like you said, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity for our work to overlap.
No. So what do you think was that, we have things in common. Oh, we could be friends. And I almost would argue to some degree, part of the reason our friendship grew was I was on a team of people who were maybe less, that were a little more introvert or introverted, and I've never been all that much of a wallflower. I'm
Tony, a wallflower.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, I'm I'm me. So
yes, until you decide to be Anthony some days with your glasses.
Yeah, let me.
Those are the different.
Glasses.
That's a different view of you. But yeah, I think for us, when we started, I want to say it was during transition, when we changing of the guard at leadership mm-hmm. level, mm-hmm. Was when I think we started to become more friends because it was a shared mm-hmm. experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we had been at the company long enough to have different perspectives on the business, the customers we served and whatnot. So we exchange a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
I think what helped is your love for cooking and my love for eating, if I'm being honest with you, because also you knew all the really great restaurants in Chicago. So whenever I come visit, we just go hang out.
Mm-hmm. You had a very much ramen thing for a long time. You still do.
I do. Yes.
Yes.
Noodles will forever be my love.
If anybody ever
tells me to get rid of it in my diet, I will be sad and not listen.
What was your Slack handle before?
Oh, I used to say Noodle Monster. Yeah.
Noodle Monster.
But actually, yes. I mean, if you look at my Slack profile today, I just say I binge on noodles and do marking stuff, which is still true. So, but yeah. So to sum it all up, building our relationship, right? It'll take some time for you to find your tribe and to find your people, but don't be afraid to go outside of the department that you work in, because that's usually where you're going to get people who look at things from a different perspective, and you can have a conversation to share those differing perspectives. And I think that's where the fruit of a lot of our conversations end up, is the different perspectives we bring, because we do interface with different parts of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And it just helps flesh out your perspective. Being able to understand from somebody else's viewpoint on what's important to them versus not what's important to their business, like their part of the business. And so I think what's interesting in cybersecurity, and maybe this is why I enjoy being in cybersecurity, is like people are quick to judge what security is responsible for, but don't actually get to know people in security. And I just feel like there's a lot of brilliant and awesome people in cybersecurity. Like, don't be afraid to befriend them and ask for their opinions, right? And I think that's what helped bridge the gap for me to you, considering your background in pen testing. Many people would be like, man, Tony's just like so smart that it can be intimidating to talk to somebody who's really well-versed in technical stuff, because you don't want to sound stupid. But if you lay the groundwork, which I think you've done a brilliant job of in our relationship, of just being able to have a comfortable zone of safety to ask what other people might consider stupid questions, right? Is being able to ask the plain and obvious, like, what does this term mean? Like, you may use, I'll just take a simple thing for now. SaaS and DaaS, right? Like, you say that in passing, right? Somebody who's new to cybersecurity marketing is going to be like, what is that? But at the same time, as a marketer, right, we also have to know the market well enough in order to play in it. And so I think to some extent, marketers sometimes feel a little bit worried about asking the harder questions, or the questions to understand what certain terms mean, why does it matter, and that sort of thing. And so if you were to help a fellow technical person be able to create that safe space to have entertain these questions and learning sessions, how would you advise them? What are like the couple of two or three things that you've seen work for yourself to build those relationships?
Yeah, I think like for myself, I think I've said this before. I like to say something that I know is completely wrong and say like, we know this is wrong, but like, let's go down that line and like actually talk about like, you know, like, oh, like the bad idea. I think it's a good idea to talk about bad ideas for one thing, and why they don't work. And that, like, again, this is why I get long-winded. This is why I can kind of go off on the straight path. But I also think it's about, like, I don't know, like, embracing failure is a really fun thing. Like, embracing, like, the idea of that there's, like, oh, there's a lot of wrong ways to do things. And like, evaluating why they're wrong is a good thing. And, like, being comfortable with that. Being comfortable with, you know, like, fall down, get up, try again, fall down, get up, try again. And kind of, you know, iterate on those things. The other part of this is I've had situations where, you know, communicating clearly is often the path to kind of like getting somebody to be like, oh yeah, I agree. And there's definitely a part of me personally that just kind of enjoys that, like, oh, like you got fulfillment from that. That's great. You know, like, that's awesome. That helped you.
So you are saying you get fulfillment from bringing somebody along to getting them to say, oh, this makes sense. Yes, this is the way to go.
Yes.
Getting to yes.
Mm-hmm. Getting to yes or getting to no, depending on what you're trying to do. But really, if you find that common ground, like if this is a problem, you know, and don't get me wrong, not everyone is about the problem. They're about the solution. I think we've talked about this before. Like, I will be long-winded about how beautiful the problem is and how great it is and how, like, you know, like, oh, like there's this piece of the problem. But, you know, if we can kind of relate it to this and maybe we can mirror that to solve it. And, da, 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 da. And you're just looking at your watch saying, okay, come on. And like, what's the point? What is the answer? What is the thing I need to know? And there's no doubt. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that was like the cycle that we would often have when talking about like a particular vulnerability that you maybe found in an app or something like that. You'd be explaining to me like, what is vulnerable? What's the best way to fix it? But like, also I would just ask, but why does it matter? Like, sure, CVSS score tells me something, but what is the likelihood that somebody's actually going to take advantage of that? And I wonder how many of our security brethren also struggle with that sort of conversation of trying to communicate clearly what the impact would be of a vulnerability, of being exposed, right? And that is a constant communication stream that I think a lot of security folks have to have across business functions. So I would say that is a cycle. I don't think that was necessarily unique to us. I would imagine, and if you're tuning in and you're a security person or you are a non-security person who gets approached by security folks often about things you gotta fix, I would just love to hear from you, like, what makes it more palatable to you when somebody's trying to explain the importance of fixing something? What's worked for you? Because I would say understanding the problem is one thing, but inspiring somebody to act on it is another. So I'd be actually curious, Tony, in your conversations with customers back in NASSecure days when you would have to present these assessment reports and stuff, what were the things that helped you convince a customer, hey, they need to fix this, and they actually do it?
Business context. It's always business context. Business context. What do I mean by that? Like, business context means, oh, if you don't fix this, you're not going to be able to publish this here. If you don't fix this, you may have availability issues here. And like, just saying that is like, okay, what do you mean by not publish it? What do you mean by availability issues? Mm-hmm. Like, well, that means that the thing isn't going to work. And if it doesn't work, that means, you know, like, oh, people aren't going to be able to do this. Oh, like that new feature, it's just not going to work. Like, yeah, it's just going to stop working if somebody does this thing to it. And, you know, you'll be messaging me about it, asking, hey, why didn't you tell me this was what was going to happen? but in a nicer way than that. I think.
Yes, calling your baby ugly is not a fun situation to be in.
Yeah.
However,
depends on your personality. I won't deny. There's always like from the security realm when I would work in that managed services component in the pen testing world, there was certainly a part like I spent so much time writing this report and you're not gonna read it. So let me just tell you the important parts. And, you know, like, and part of it was that, but also part of it was, you know, like, oh, like, you need to be aware of the bad stuff. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you put hard work into things and you want to be able to express it to people. So I'd almost say, like, working in, like, information security, but other components of the business, you all want to express, like, this is the work I've been looking into. This is the work I've done. This is what I've spent my like hours trying to figure out and have figured out or have partially figured out or like have like really a lot of interest around. You know, like there's, that's where I get to that. Like, well, I love the problem because I spend time on the problem, and I'm sure a lot of you spend time on the problem and get like wrapped up in it. And to other people, it's like, well, what's the conclusion? And
well, and I will say, like, just to pull out something you said earlier that I thought was very insightful is I have this big old report. I did all this work, but I'm going to tell you the important pieces. And I think that is the important piece of moving, not only being able to communicate clearly, but also moving up in career. So there's, side note, there's this marketing operations leader that I follow because I have my roots in marketing operations. I was a Marketo user and I really, really enjoy like going to Marketo Summit and learning from other operations professionals. And one of the things that she said recently, I've been following her for maybe like 6 or 7 years at this point. She's senior director at F5. She said she spends more time, less technical knowledge has to be shared and more putting it into business context, right? Distilling down the work that her team has done into pieces and translating it into why is it important to the business? Why is it like, and what are the succinct pieces in plain English that people can take and understand the value that they bring? And I think that's like one of the biggest gaps that I've seen, that I've at least heard a lot also just following people on Twitter and LinkedIn and listening to podcasts and stuff, is the value. How do you communicate the value of what your team does and the work that they do? And I think information security is such a nascent industry that we're still figuring out how to communicate that value. And there are definitely people who have a technical background who can translate that. But I think there's more people coming into cybersecurity now that don't necessarily have a technical background. And part of the value that they bring is being able to see the problem in a different way and communicate it in a different way. So all that to say is being able to take the work that you've done and distill it down, that is like a huge part of being able to translate between the technical and non-technical, especially if you're talking upstream, to make it simple and put it in their context of why it's important and to fix it. So like you said, saying a user can't use their app the way that they intended because a security feature is off or on, right? Or being able to recognize that revenue will suffer if something's not working, right? Those are very real business context pieces that can be used to communicate value to fixing something. So thank you for sharing that. One of the other questions that you said that I thought was really interesting, this was in our prep call. What is the value of information?
Yeah, we dug into that because I kind of got into this, like, what is the intrinsic value of the journey versus the actual solution? And all the value is in that solution. But, you know, there's really no intrinsic value to explaining the journey that you had to get there, except there is, because, like I said, like, I think I'm a big believer in, like, this Richard Feynman thought where, like, the same problems have the same solutions, and it's just a matter of, you know, figuring out how these things translate between one another and how, like, you have to tweak things to make them make sense between one another. And really, like, our big barrier is, one, our ability to communicate these things, but two, our way to interpret the information back. And there's people who were probably, like, Richard Feynman fans who were like, no, you're wrong. Like, it really means this and really means this. But there's truth into in the idea that, you know, like, we have these, like, really repeatable problems, and they have, like, the same answer all the time. I think I've said to you, like, fundamentally, like, every job I've had is essentially the same.
Yeah,
I've said that.
I actually had one of my previous bosses say the more you, the more companies you work at, and especially if you stay in the same role, it's just more of the same. It's just looking like you're
different perspectives.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. But it's hard to make that connection, right? It's hard to mm-hmm. say, oh, these two problems are very similar. And, you know, like going about it this way means you can do this. Going about it this way means you can do it this way. And I mean, like, that's, we're being super abstract about
yes.
things. I know that. But yeah, like it, but to your point, like none of it really matters unless you can't come to a conclusion of a yes
do
or
something
a no.
with the information.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Which is why I feel like the way that I learn is, okay, I'm outcome oriented. What do I need to know to make the best possible decision here? Versus I think you're much more in line of like, I just like to learn things for the sake of learning things. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's just such an interesting approach to learning. And then also, because we learn in different ways, we then learn how to communicate in different ways because mm-hmm. of the exchange of conversation. So all that to say is there is merit for both types. There's merit for people who enjoy the journey. There's merit for people who are outcome focused. You need both in order to get somewhere. And I think the being able to practice the translation between technical and non-technical is similar in that partnership of journey versus outcome. You need both in order to refine each other. And I think that cybersecurity in general is kind of in that boat right now of learning how to share security information in a way that non-security specialists understand. So.
Yes. And I think it would apply to a bunch of other careers, but.
Oh, yes. 100%. I think there's, I honestly think anywhere, anything that has a technical component, an operational component, right, you will always have that like dissonance or struggle with trying to communicate to somebody who doesn't know your field as well as you do. Mm-hmm. But that's also why there's like science communication programs. There's like various like communication programs out there that are dedicated to how do you communicate a technical field, technical terms, right, to the general public and explain why it's important.
I have a good question. Is it,
go for it.
Is it easier to learn the technical pieces than learn to communicate it? Or do you think it's more important you learn to communicate than learn the technical part? I think that's just kind of an interesting
It's a question. Good question of like chicken and egg.
Mm-hmm.
Had you asked me this, like, I would even say like 5-6 years ago, I would always say I would have said it was more important to learn the technical than learn how to communicate it, because that was just where my career was. It's very mm-hmm. much in the weeds of marketing operations, doing the work, right? And I had a boss who could communicate up. But I think now that my career has shifted a bit and I'm more advanced in my career, I would say communication probably is more important than the technical side, because mm-hmm. that's how you bring people along into alignment. And in order to achieve an outcome as a team, you need to get everybody on your team on board.
Mm-hmm.
So is it easier to learn how to communicate versus learn how to technical, like learn the technical chops? I would almost say that communication today is probably more important, because you can learn how to ask the questions to get the technical answers that you need with the technical experts.
So I'll admit my secret, because I'm drawing a conclusion right now. I'm having an epiphany. Whenever I've learned anything like super technical, I think I've come to you and other people, of course, and like wanted to talk about it and explain it to kind of like actually reassert that I understand the concept. And then I'm like, and then it's like, to me, it's
yes,
like,
Tony,
it's
you're smart.
But no, like if I can get you to understand it, then that means I really learned it. And that means that it's something that's maybe even useful.
Well, I would also say, like, being able to teach a concept, right, is the true test of knowledge. Like, how well do you actually know the area of expertise that you're trying to talk about? And the reality is that people who go super deep, like, into, like, more than you, like, I'm talking like PhD level, postdoc level, like, focus, don't always have the skill set to then communicate about it, right? Which is, I think, just a testament to more your educator heart of being able to explain it. You take pride in being able to explain concepts and get people bought into it and understand it.
I also think I'm very functional with my learning. I don't really like to learn, like, I like to learn things because I have, like, some function for it, or because they're, but, and I will say, like, and there's times where I'm just like, oh, this kind of, like, oh, they're talking about this on TV or in the movie or in, like some, like, Netflix series. Like,
what was the functional reason then for learning how to ferment vegetables? And fruit. Didn't you ferment?
I wanted to make hot sauce. I wanted to make hot sauce. And then I found out, oh, like, well, like, you know, peppers are a fruit. Why can't you, like, ferment other, like, types of fruit? And then I saw, like, there were videos people doing that. And then I, and then, like, it kind of went down a rabbit hole. And that is 100% what always ends up happening. I go down this rabbit hole of, oh, like, this thing relates to this thing. Oh, like, that's interesting. Like, oh, sourdough? What about brioche bread? What about this other thing? I forgot, like, You've done that too, because you went from sourdough to making croissants, and to me, that's like, that's way more complex.
Making croissants is really hard, though. I actually really enjoyed it. It's just a lot of work. But then you got, when you went on your fermentation kick, that's also when I was like, oh, I can, like, learn how to make kimchi. And actually I did that for a long while because it was delicious. What was I going to say? There was something I was going to say. I don't remember.
You made me think of something just now, and I can't remember what I was going to say either. But I think for me, I get these random interests, and then I just kind of drill down into them, and then I realize, oh, and then I move on to something else. And maybe that's...
I think, though, that desire to learn, like, there's something to be said. I think, if anything, of across all the people that I've talked to on psychotherapy, there's an innate curiosity, like, and they're willing to chase it, no matter whether they were technical in nature, right, and they wanted to, like, take apart a computer or, like, learn how to make it so that their internet was, like, prime time for when they were gaming. I would even say, like, the people who are getting into cybersecurity that I've had also on the show, there's just a curiosity and a fearlessness to chase it. And I think it's in line with what you said earlier about being able to accept failure is, like, a huge thing. And that's what creates a safe space. And I think that's very common across just the people that I talk to. It's like their willingness to learn, their willingness to fail, to research, and just continue learning and share the learning, right? Which I just think has been so cool to discover in this industry. And so if you're new to cybersecurity, or if you're, like, not an actual, like, in the weeds security professional, you're, like, you know, work for a vendor or something like that, like, find your people who you can banter with and whatnot. Anyways, is it time for a game?
Yeah, why not?
All right, let's kick off the game. Yes, I am so happy that we have that, like, interstitial right there. Okay, so because it's just the two of us, we're gonna play a game called Gibberish. And some of you in the audience may know this game. It's actually a card game, like, where you, like, read it and basically
Don't judge us for our skills at this, because I think we're going to be really bad.
We were bad in our test run, and that's okay. All right, so this is the first one. We got to figure out what the actual term is from this gibberish. Prez, oh. Hill, he, and wax. Brazilian wax.
Oh, you got that one. That was good.
That was helpful because it was Lifestyle Woman was the clue. All right. Something that's trending.
Stem who lust jack? Stem?
Stimulus check.
Stimulus check. you've been practicing.
I was not this good when we were playing it yesterday. Yesterday was pretty awful. Okay.
Barack Obama.
Oops. Oh, good job.
My competitiveness is kicking in now.
Okay. We're playing what? First to five?
Sure. Okay. What is this? Wrist, ink.
Wrist, ink, pidge. No. Pig to face? Face? That's not even a word.
Yeah. That's more a sound. Pig to. I need to Google that. I feel like it's probably a word, and we're going to look it up on Webster's Dictionary and be like, oh, we're such fools. Why don't we know this? Lifestyle.
Wrist-ink.
I'm at a loss on this one.
All right, let's do a clue. Not mad, just how I look. Oh, resting bitch face. that clue was very helpful. Okay.
ET phone home.
Oh, good job. Yeah, good job. Oh, why does it keep telling me to end the turn? Whatever. Can you've...
Can you home-mow me? I'm ready for a clue when you are.
Oh, I gotta end the turn. Hold on. Oh, no.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. We'll never know the answer to that one.
We'll never know that one. Sorry.
Oh, I got this one. Run, Forrest, run.
Oh, good job. Oh, thank you, Tyler Peterson. Can you Venmo me? That was the last one. Awesome. Okay. Good job, producer. Burr wake up season.
Breakup season.
Oh, sad.
Is that it?
Yeah, good job.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I know this one.
Saturday.
Liz hates this phrase. Saturday is for the boys.
Oh. Good job. See, you won, man. And here you were saying that you're gonna sub in on it.
I was terrible at it when we were playing.
I think everybody is. Great job to everybody played. Tyler Peterson, thank you for tuning in and joining in on that one, because that I wasn't clearly not thinking. But yeah, good job, Tony. Round of applause for winning the game. Woo! Alrighty, folks. I think we are going to wrap this one up. Thank you so much for tuning in to the first episode of season 2. Our next episode is on February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day, just in case anybody was wondering when that holiday is. It's coming up soon. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I will not tell you where I stand on that. Our guest. Would you like to say a little bit about our guest, Tony?
Michael Roberts from Abbott Diabetes Company will be joining us. Somebody I work with regularly, but also somebody who I just like talking to. Great guy. Great person.
Yes. So stay tuned. He is a leader of a product security team. And so we'll get to learn a little bit about him, a little bit how he leads his team and how he's scaled. And so we're really looking forward to having him on the show. And with that, we will see you next time.